Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, September 9th, 2017. This is episode 1420. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Qualcomm Snapdragon Gigabit LTE. To learn more about fiber optic download speeds on a smartphone, go to snapdragon.com/gigabit. And by 23andMe. With 23andMe's genetic service, you can learn what percentage of your DNA comes from places like Italy, Finland, East Asia, or Africa, or Neanderthals. Visit 23andMe.com/twit. And by Fracture. Fracture is a photo decor company that prints your photos directly onto glass and then delivers them to your door, ready to display right out of the box. Visit FractureMe.com/podcast for 10% off your first order and select the Tech Guy so Fracture knows where you heard about him. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. All that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. This is a show where we talk about technology, how it's changing our lives, how it's making things worse and better. First, of course, our thoughts and prayers to now not just our friends in Texas, but our friends in Florida. And, of course, the Virgin Islands and the Bahamas and Cuba and Hispaniola. And just what a mess. Oh. Talk about messes. I know you've all been following the news from Equifax. Nice company. There are four, if you include, there's a little one, credit reporting agencies. As you probably know, if you apply for credit, buy a house, buy a car, get a credit card, the company that you're applying to will then, they'll ask you for your social and your name and birthday, usually. That's all they really need. And then they'll run a credit check. The credit check goes to one of these three big credit agencies, Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax. Equifax, probably the biggest of the three, but they've been, without your permission, maybe even without your knowledge, all along collecting information about you, everything possible to know about you. We talk a lot about privacy here. This is one you don't have any choice. If you want to live in this world and you want to have a credit card, you want to buy a car on time, you're going to need, to participate in this. But you don't have to do anything. Here's the good news. Every time you buy something, every time you buy a house, every time you rent a place, every time you do anything economic, it gets recorded by these agencies. And they keep track of it, and they will report it to people, and they create a score, a FICO score for you, which is a credit score ranging from 0 to, I think, 800 or 850, maybe 900. I've never seen a 900, but I bet that's probably the theoretical limit. And that score determines your credit worthiness and, in many respects, your ability to participate in the world. The important thing about this is you didn't agree to it. I mean, I guess we did technically because it's probably buried down there in the fine print of every contract we signed. But you didn't, most of us don't explicitly say, yeah, I want you to store all my credit information. But these companies have a very high duty to protect that information, because if you have that information, all you really need is a name, birth date, and social security number. You can apply for a credit card. You can apply for credit. A bad guy can do that. That's called identity theft. And it's, with that information, it's a trivial thing to do. It happens, and it's very difficult to fix. So these companies have a very high duty to all of us to protect us and protect that data. Equifax did not. They did a terrible job On July 29th, they realized hackers had broken in and stolen 143 million credit records. That's almost all of the adults in the United States. Certainly a good proportion of them. They're making statements at this point which I would not trust or believe. Do not believe Experian when they say, oh, don't worry, only a few hundred thousand people, were the credit card numbers revealed. Don't buy it. They didn't tell us. They knew about it July 29th. A week or two later, three of their executives sold their stock for millions of dollars, including their chief financial officer. Experian has again, I think, lied to us. It's my guess. Saying, oh, they didn't know. Your chief financial officer didn't know. Really? So I'm sure they'll be investigated for insider trading. They didn't notify us for 5 weeks. And the way you're supposed to find out now is to go to a website run by Experian, poorly run, I might add, by Experian. Of course, security people looked immediately at the website and found things like the guy's name, the login name in the publicly visible JavaScript code. It was down. It was up. It doesn't seem to do anything. You're supposed to give it the last six digits of your social and your last name, and it will tell you if you were affected, if your data was compromised. Don't. Please don't. Not that it's a phishing site. It's really from Experian, but don't give Experian any more information. A number of security researchers, including Bruce Schneier, tried a random name and last six random digits and still got the same result on that site. So it's meaningless. It has nothing to do with anything. And worst of all, it's a come on to sign up for a credit credit check service that will be free for the first year. What do you bet? Day 366, it's not free anymore. Experian will likely profit from this. Shocking. So what should you do? Well, I think step one is to assume you've been compromised. You can't trust what Experian's telling people. Watch, in the days to come, the number will expand. It always does. Every time we see these breaches, the number expands. I don't think they were straight with us in the beginning. They hid it for 5 weeks. That could have been a critical 5 weeks. Those are 5 weeks those hackers had free rein. They're not really being very forthcoming. And the offer that they're making to people is ridiculous. So don't deal with Experian, period. Here's what you should do. You have two options. And unfortunately, they're not good options for people who are looking to get credit right now. If you're in the process of buying a house or a car or renting an apartment or getting a credit card, these aren't probably very good choices, but they are my recommendation. You have two things you can do. You could put a fraud alert on your credit reporting, on the three credit reporting agencies. Put one, I understand, and you should try this to make sure, but I understand if you put it on one, they'll tell the others. You know what? Put it on all three. The fraud alert means they have to contact you if somebody applies for credit in your name. That's very good. Unfortunately, these companies hate it because the way they make money is by giving your information to companies, by producing credit reports. But you know all those free credit card offers you get in the mail? That's money in the bank for Experian and TransUnion and Equifax. So my suggestion is not to give Equifax any more money. Have I been saying Experian? I meant Equifax. I hope I've been saying Equifax. I get confused. Equifax. Don't give any more information to Equifax. Put a fraud alert on all three accounts. There's one further step you could take that does cost money. Not a huge amount of money, but you can also do a credit freeze. Credit freeze is even more extreme. But in both cases, these companies don't like this. They'd hate it because they're not going to make any more money on you, and you're a pain. So a fraud alert would be my strongest suggestion. Do that. But every 60 to 90 days, you have to renew it. So keep an eye on that. There's another, you can do a credit freeze that costs $20-$30. You want to keep an eye on that. And remember, in both cases, you won't be able to get credit unless you lift them, at least temporarily. Credit freeze, you're given a PIN number and you can give somebody access to your credit. This will stop the bad guys cold. I mean, Well, not completely. Because they may have your credit card number, too. Yes, credit card numbers were also leaked in this breach. So that means you need to monitor your credit report. You can get one free every year. And you may want to subscribe to a credit monitoring service. First, check with your financial institutions. Many credit cards, banks offer these for free or a value-added service. Check with them. There are companies that do this. I use LifeLock. They'll ping you if they see any of your personal information used or shown by bad guys in a database. Pick one of those. I wouldn't do all of them because you don't want to be overwhelmed by alerts. But pick one of those and keep an eye on things. And shame on Equifax. Shame on Equifax. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Right. It's a pain in the butt. You have to remember you have it. And if you, you know, if you want to get credit, you have to lift it. LifeLock's one of my sponsors, or what has been in the past, and I am a LifeLock subscriber. Immediately, I already had it for myself and my kids. I immediately signed Lisa and her son up. It's not cheap, however, and it is probably the case that you can get similar services, if not identical. I wouldn't say not identical services, because LifeLock owns one of the big back-end service companies for credit cards, so they have kind of a pipeline into that stuff. I know I kept saying Experian, and I apologize. Equifax. Thank you for correcting me. They're all, by the way, they're all bad. They're all bad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, please, my apologies to Experian. I didn't mean to lump them in. It's Equifax, of course, that had the big data breach, and I just confused them. Although, in my opinion, all three companies, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, have a lot to be sorry for. Equifax is the one that had the breach. The problem is all of these companies, and there's a fourth I didn't know about called Innovis, I-N-N-O-V-I-S. All four of these credit reporting agencies make their living selling your information to companies, whether it's because you asked for a credit. You know, and that's a, you know, this thing, I guess that has to happen, right? If you're going to go to a credit card company and say, I want a credit card, they need some way to verify whether you pay your bills. So they go to one of these four companies. So I guess that has to happen. But they also make a lot of money selling your information to companies who want to offer you credit cards. That's, if you get free credit card offers in the mail, you can thank Equifax, Experian, TransUnion, and Innovis. That's what they do. So at least I have to say commend Innovis, because if you go to their front page, they right on the front page, they have information. Actually, is that their front page? No, it's not. Yeah, well, they might. None of these companies do. They do have on the front page a link to their security freeze and fraud alerts. So I do encourage you to go to the four, Equifax, TransUnion, Experian, and Innovis, and put a fraud alert on. And if you're really concerned and you're willing to spend a little money, put a freeze on. But again, that's not going to mitigate this data leak, because we don't know what the bad guys got. Do not go to the Equifax. I'm not even going to say the address, because if you'll have received an email, you probably see news reports that say Equifax has a special site set up for you so you can tell. It's bogus. If you go there and enter a phony name and a phony fake six digits that have nothing to do with you or your social, you'll still get the warning, yeah, we think some of your data might have been released. Why don't you sign up for our free credit protection service? These guys are so... chutzpah, that they're actually going to try to make money off of us after this. Just terrible. We're going to put together some links. ScooterX has a good one on credit freeze laws. In California, we'll get some other states. We'll get federal laws. But we'll put some information up there and links to the fraud alert information for each of those four credit reporting agencies and credit freeze information for all four of them as well. And then really critically, it's time to start monitoring, if you haven't been doing it already, both your credit report, which you can get once for free yearly. Don't go, by the way, freecreditreport.com. That's not free. That's a very similar attempt by Experian, another one of my favorite credit reporting agencies, to get you to pay for your credit report, despite the name. You do once a year, you get a free credit report from all of them. So it's a good idea to make a note in your calendar, get that on a regular basis, and then keep an eye on people asking for credit and applying for credit in your name. But I think you also want – it wouldn't hurt, and I subscribe to LifeLock, but there are others to a monitoring service because they go beyond that. They keep an eye out for your things like your driver's license, your email, your address, your social in all sorts of places, including the places on the dark web where bad guys are trading in this information, just to keep you appraised. Your email address is probably out there. Everybody's got that. That's not much use. They could send you spam. Well, guess what? You're already getting it. But your social, your address, your date of birth, mother's maiden name, that kind of stuff, phone numbers, you don't want that to leak out. And, you know, there's a massive class action lawsuit begun. By the way, there was some concern that if you went to the Equifax page and asked if you had been breached, that you might be giving up your rights to a class action lawsuit. I've been told that's not the case. However, they do have an arbitration clause in if you sign up for Trusted ID, their free service that's free at least for the first year, but probably not after that, to monitor your credit. Don't use that. Don't sign up for that. Equifax says, oh, that arbitration clause doesn't apply to this breach. Again, you can trust them as far as you can throw them. I would go nowhere near Equifax at this point and give them no additional information. But many, many other companies offer either free or low cost monitoring credit, monitoring and that kind of thing. And that probably is a good idea. Check again with your financial institution. If you're a AAA member, they have an inexpensive service, $9 a month. My bank, USAA, offers a free service. Many banks and credit cards. I saw a Discover ad just the other day that said they do it too. So check with your financial institutions. This is because I bet you every one of them will offer something. Because, of course, credit card fraud hits the banks. It makes money for Equifax, but it hits the banks. So they're gonna be your best ally in all of this. 8888 ask Leo. That's the phone number. Kim, it's really, I hate starting off this way. We got
hurricanes,
earthquakes in Mexico, and then
fraud. And the fires. Don't forget the fires.
And the fires.
And down south.
You know, this Equifax breach was we were just ripe for this. And that's the problem with these companies that store these databases. It's not a surprise. By the way, it's not a secret how to protect this stuff. It's not even that hard. But they don't seem to want to do it. Costs money, I guess.
Yep.
Anyway, you've been answering the phones, and I'm sure we have nice callers who want to talk about other things. So.
Yeah, speaking of fraud or scams, Brad in Corning, he got a call from Microsoft and wants to know if it was really Microsoft or if it was just...
It was not, but I'll tell him.
It was probably not.
I
told
him
it probably
was
not.
Yes.
But I thought you could elaborate on
that. Is that line two, Brad and Corning?
Yes, sorry, line two.
Thank you, Kim. Hey, Brad, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How's it going?
Oh, it's going well. How are you?
Just fine, thanks. Hey, first off, I would like to thank you for all the information that you give out. It's really great.
My pleasure. I'm glad I could be here to do that.
Cool. And yesterday I was over at my mom's house, and about, 9:30 in the morning, she got a call from this lady. Said she was from Microsoft down in Redwood City, and she even left a name and a number.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And
what did she say? What did she want?
She said that she was getting notifications that our computer could be possibly being hacked.
That's I was going to say another word. That's bogus.
Right.
I get calls from Windows a lot. Although the fact that she gave you a name and phone number is interesting.
Right.
That's not typical, but that doesn't mean it's not.
I could give it to your screener and then.
No. It's fraudulent. Microsoft's very clear. We do not call.
That's what I thought. How could they possibly contact everybody that has?
How would they know her number?
Thank you.
No. Exactly. Tell everybody listening. You don't. Because what they're going to end up doing is one of two things, maybe both. They're going to ask for money to repair the fake problems, and they're going to ask for remote access to your computer, which means that they can then install their own fake stuff. Yeah. We live in an era of fraudsters, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah. Well, Mom's 84, so let's...
Yeah, she's just ripe for that, and I'm sorry. But I'm glad she's got a good son. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're waiting to talk to Scott Wilkinson. Scott is at the big Cedia show, which is the home theater installation show, but it's going to be more than that this year. It's going to also feature a lot of Internet of Things devices, speech-activated thingamajiggies. And Scott will join us if we can get a hold of him on the phone. We may not have him, but I will take calls anyway. And then if we get Scott, we'll put him on the air. Let's continue to good news is I have lots of people want to talk all the way down Mexico way. Bill's on the line. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Where are you, How Bill? Are you? We're in Mexico.
Querétaro, Mexico.
All right. I hope you're okay. I hope you're okay from the earthquake and apparently.
Yeah, they're about 200, about a little over 200 kilometers from here.
All right. So you're good.
No damage.
What can I do for you today?
Well, I have the, the T-Mobile business, and they keep changing the name, but it's the North America plan.
Yeah.
You know, with Canada, you know, and I'm down here. I'm getting like 10 to 15 megabits up, down, and
nice.
12 up on data.
That's fantastic.
I can't call out. I can receive calls. I can't call out. They tell me that. So international calling is not blocked.
It's sometimes tricky to make phone calls internationally on an American phone. You may have to dial the country code and all of that. You can't just dial the number as if you were in the U.S., even though you're using your U.S. phone and people can reach you just by dialing your number. Generally, my experience has been with T-Mobile, to reach an international number. If you're in Mexico, for instance, you need to dial the U.S. country code 001 ahead of it. Have you tried that?
I didn't do the 001.
Yeah, try that.
And I knew you were the person to talk to.
Yeah. Well, I tell you why. I this is one of the great things about T-Mobile, and now everybody's following suit, but T-Mobile was the first. They offer, this kind of unlimited international texting and data. And look at the speed you're getting. You do pay for calls. I think it's $2 a minute, but it's still a lot less than it would cost if you didn't have an international plan. So, try that. You got to do the 11-digit calling to make that work, I believe, to the U.S. It's because you're not, even though you're using an American phone, if somebody from the U.S. calls you, they use your number because the American, sometimes I think they may have to dial internationally at a 001 to say the country code, even if they're calling you in Mexico. Usually your number will work because T-Mobile handles that. But remember, you're not on T-Mobile right now. You're on a Mexican carrier, and so they don't understand unless you give them the 001. Enjoy your time in Mexico. I'm glad you're far enough from the quake not to have to worry about tsunamis and things like that. And Scooter X, who is always amazing in our chat room, he's one of our many great chat mods, tells us how to make an international call, we'll put the link from T-Mobile in the show notes. Actually, that's not exactly what we're doing. That's we're making a call. You may actually have to dial plus two. I don't know if that's the case. You might have to do plus 001 or plus one. Try it either way. It just depends. It's one of those, it just depends what the local network is expecting. Andy in North Chesterfield, Virginia. Hi, Andy.
Hello, Leo. It's a pleasure.
That's a pleasure to talk to you.
I'm feeling so bad for my brother down in Naples, Florida right now and his extended family, but I know that the whole country is pulling for them.
Absolutely. Has he? Have you been in touch with him since the hurricane hit? No.
I haven't been able to reach them, but they have other fish to fry right now.
Yeah, they do, don't they? And I hope they're battening down the hatches and they've either gone to safety or you know, protected themselves somehow.
Thanks very much, Leo. Yeah. Leo, I wanted to ask you what your closet at home looks like, but I haven't.
Actually, a closet's not big enough. So basically, I have what's called, and I'm putting this in air quotes, a home office.
What I meant was, how do you store all these gizmos and find them?
That's what I'm saying is, it doesn't fit in the closet. It's in my home office, which really is a storeroom with wires. And it's like, you're probably old enough to remember, as I am, Fibber McGee's closet. Open that closet, McGee! Oh, it's like a Fibber McGee's closet.
Leo, maybe a photo someday.
No, it's my secret shame. I have a friend who for many years was one of the most both revered and reviled computer columnists. He had the power of life or death, which meant that every company sent him copies of their hardware and software. He ended up having to rent a room above a gas station.
Yeah.
And I remember John C. Dvorak, I remember asking him, hey, I need a modem. Do you have any modems? He said, yeah, come over to the gas station. It reminded me a little bit of it. Remember at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark when they take the ark and they put it in the U.S. warehouse? It was a little bit like that.
I'm sure your storeroom looks like that.
It's not that bad because I try to get rid of stuff as best I can. My wife makes it.
Leo, a technical question.
Yes,
I don't want to hang you up too long. I have Windows 10, and in the latest update, now when I go to open Word or several other programs, I get a message that says, open file security warning. Do you want to open this file?
Wow, you shouldn't be seeing that.
No, and there's no way to say, check here and get rid of this message.
Well, it says okay or cancel, right?
It says open or cancel.
Yeah, but there's no way to say, I don't want to see that anymore.
That's right, and this is particularly frustrating since it's Microsoft Word that I'm trying to open on Windows 10.
And how are you opening it? Are you opening it from the Start menu?
Well, no, actually, that's a good question. I made a shortcut, and that's on my desktop.
Does it do the same thing if you go to the Start menu and open it?
Oh, I'm embarrassed to say I haven't tried it.
So my guess is it's that file, it's that shortcut that's worrying Windows. You know, these days they've got to be extra careful about people opening dangerous stuff, and I suspect that's what the issue is. Here's what I would suggest. Faster than a shortcut, faster than a speeding bullet. It's something I surprised people don't know, but it's probably the most important Windows tip ever. If you know that Windows key on the bottom row there next to the control and the alt that it's got the Windows logo on it?
Yep, I see it there.
If you hit that and you type WOR, by the time you've typed W, but certainly by the time you type WOR, the Start menu will pop up with Microsoft Word highlighted. And then you hit return. And then you hit return. And that is by far the fastest way to launch any program. You can even do it with documents. It's a very quick way, and it eliminates the need to create icons on the desktop. I understand your desire to do so.
Sure.
How did you create the icon?
I just went into what do we call it these days? Windows Explorer.
Yeah, and you right-clicked on the Word.
Right-clicked and made a shortcut, just like we've been doing for hundreds of years.
Yeah, but Windows is so complicated. Who knows if that thing that looked like it was Word.exe is really the thing that launches Word.exe, that kind of thing. It's my guess, and try this. Try launching Word from the Start menu. Just hit Windows key WORD. See if it launches without that error message. If it does, then it's something about the icon that is malformed. And if you Google it, you can find ways to make these desktop icons safely. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I also, another way to do it, put it in I do the taskbar as well. I like that. So you can right click on it and say add, pin, you can either say pin to start menu or pin to taskbar, and then it'll be always there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 ask Leo. I want to tip a hat to somebody that some of you will know. Certainly a guy I really revere and admire, passed away yesterday at the age of 84. His name is Jerry Pournelle. And if you go back away in the earliest days of personal computing, Jerry was at Byte Magazine, the author of a column called Chaos Manor that was in many ways the inspiration for me and what I do, and really a whole generation of tech journalists. The thing that was new and different about Jerry's column, Chaos Manor, is he wrote about using technology. It was computers back then, pretty much exclusively. He wrote about using computers from the user's point of view, and that really was kind of new. He talked about what it was like to set up a computer, his problems with, in the early days, CPM and DOS and Electric Pencil and Word Perfect, the old programs. He talked about, he named his computers. I remember Ezekiel, his Z80 computer. And he wrote about them in a folksy, friendly, but informed way that I think for a whole generation of us excited us about computing and made us feel like we knew Jerry and what it was like to be Jerry. And he was one of us. He, of course, was better known in the outside world as a great science fiction author. He wrote with Larry Niven some of the most important science fiction novels of our time, including Lucifer's Hammer, some really Moten God's Eye, some really inspiring science fiction, which is today still considered classic and well worth reading if you haven't read any of Jerry's works with Larry Niven. And then in his later days, he appeared many times on our shows on my TWIT podcast, This Week in Tech Roundtable podcast. I have two interviews I did with Jerry on our interview show, Triangulation. They're both available at twit.tv, my podcast website. A great guy, a great writer, a great friend, and an inspiration for all of us who cover technology. And he will certainly be missed. Jerry Pournelle passed away quietly, according to his son. Alex posted on his website, Chaos Manor, that he went to Dragon Con, had a great time, the big science fiction convention, and passed away painlessly and quietly. So a great guy. And if you do know the name and you remember him, maybe, tip of the hat to Jerry Pournelle, who is probably building PCs in the sky. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. Cerise next on the line from Newport Beach, California. Hi, Cerise.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Come over to the phone. Let's talk, you and me.
I'm coming now. My grandbaby's actually here right now.
Oh, well, you could pick him up or her up and bring
yep,
her over.
Yep, she's in my arms.
Oh.
She's in my arms right
nice.
Now.
Nice.
Say hi, Ava. Hi.
Hi, Ava. Oh, what a sweetie. Well, what can I do for you and Ava?
Okay, so I have her with me a lot in the car, and she has a couple of favorite movies on Netflix, and I'm trying to figure out a way to where she can sit in the back seat and watch Netflix, but I can still have my phone in the front.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? That's why you see so many kids these days with tablets in their hands.
Okay.
And Ava, how old is Ava?
She's just 1.5.
She will learn in the next 6 months. I've seen it happen, and it always blows me away how to start the tablet, open Netflix, and go to Phineas and Ferb just like that. She will, and it's amazing. So the best tablet for somebody like her, let me make sure Amazon's still doing this. For a while, Amazon offered a Fire tablet for kids that they guaranteed against damage.
Oh, wow.
And it was inexpensive. You can get it for $99. It's in a beautiful blue. I think you can also get pink, depending on how much you want to match genders, case.
Okay.
They also have yellow if you don't know what sex the baby's going to be. But what they do is they give it a 2-year guarantee against anything the kid could do with it. So the risk, of course, of giving a kid a tablet is that they'll throw it or break it. It comes in a very hard, strong hard rubber case, and Netflix is on it. She can watch her favorite shows on it. Now, the issue is going to be, of course, you can't stream in the car. So you're going to have to figure out how to get shows on there. The good news is Netflix now offers downloads of some of its content.
Okay.
So if you have a Netflix account, you can go on and download it. It also has, and you'll be glad of this, and her parents will be too, very good parental controls. It has a kid-safe browser. So as she gets older, she'll be able to use it more and more as a device. But I'm telling you, even a two-year-old, they say kids age 3 to 12, but
okay.
It does have 15,000 books, movies, TV shows, educational apps, and games. It includes a year of Amazon free time, which is their kid. It's a really good thing, and it's $90.
Perfect.
Yeah, so I know that that's still an expense you hadn't planned on, but she'll love it, and it'll be her tablet, which she'll really like.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Nice to talk to you both.
You're in the
Ava's all excited. Baby's okay, first Ava. Tablet. Oh, boy.
Say goodbye, Ava. Say bye-bye.
Hi.
Hi. Bye, Ava, sweetie. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for your help.
My pleasure, Cerise. Anytime. Yeah, that's really sweet. I think, give it to them now before they're old enough to say, no, I want an iPad. Just nip that in the bud right now. I want an iPad. Dr. Morbius in our chat room says, my first tablet was made of stone. It had the Ten Commandments carved into it. If you search Amazon for Fire tablets, it's called the Kids Edition. It's 7 inches, which is a great size actually for kids. They do have a little bit more expensive $130 HD version, which is a little bit higher quality. It's up to you. I don't think a two-year-old's going to notice the difference. Richard Lancaster, PA, is next. Hi, Richard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I'm disabled, and I had wanted to make a couple of dollars on the side. Is there anything I could do, like programming or something that would get me off the ground?
Yeah, if you're interested in that, there are so many good places you can go for free and learn how to code. And there is absolutely demand for coders. I would say consider this if it's something you like, something you're interested in, because you're not going to do as well at something that you just do because you need to. But if it's something that you're interested in, there's many places you can go. Code.org is a great place to start. My daughter is taking courses there. They have free and paid courses from a company called Udacity that was started by a former Googler, Sebastian Thrun, udacity.com. There are many places you could go if you want to learn how to code. Coding is, at the very least, it's a wonderful exercise for the brain, and it's a fun hobby. There's nothing more satisfying than writing something and seeing it run on a tablet or a phone or a desktop. So I do encourage you to give it a try. You don't have to be a mathematic wizard. Pretty much, I would say anybody can learn to code. The nice thing is these days, not only is there a lot of high demand for coders, you can do it right out of your house, but there's many resources for learning. I'd start at code.org, code.org. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a break for news. There's lots of it, and we'll have more of your calls right after this. Stay tuned. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Qualcomm. I'm a fan of Qualcomm. The Qualcomm chips power all my Android phones. And the higher-end flagship phones have these new Qualcomm Snapdragon Gigabit LTE modems that are fast. If you've got I've got a Note 8 coming, but if you've got a S8 Active or a Moto Z Force, the HTC U11, or the Galaxy S8, you've got Snapdragon Gigabit LTE. Why is it so good? Well, with additional lanes for your data to flow on and the ability to squeeze more speed into each LTE connection, Snapdragon Gigabit LTE is a lot faster. It's like driving on a much wider, faster data highway, 7 times faster than your home Wi-Fi. It could turbocharge all of your connected apps, stream 360 videos and YouTube VR in 4K resolution without buffering or stuttering. Access all your files in the cloud nearly as fast as you would if they were on your phone. That transforms how you use your smartphone. And of course, if you like watching TV and movies, it'll download in seconds on the Snapdragon Gigabit LTE. And the new Android Instant apps, they'll load almost instantly. Make the most of your unlimited data plan to learn more about faster network connections. And by the way, it even works better in the challenging, crowded downtown areas. You want it, snapdragon.com/gigabit. Carrier aggregation, 4x4 MIMO, 256 QAM, LTEU/LAAA. Those are the acronyms. Find out why that means one thing. Fast. Snapdragon.com/gigabit. And we thank Qualcomm for making the amazing Snapdragon processors and Snapdragon radios and for powering the latest flagship devices and supporting the Tech Guy podcast. Snapdragon.com/gigabit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, talking about the computers, the internet, the home theater thing, the digital photography thing, the smartphones, the smartwatches, talking about the drones, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's the phone number. The website is, and it's important to remember this because if you're listening and you're driving, you don't have to get a pen out or tell your significant other, write that down. Just, you know, chill, man, chill. Because it's all written down for you already at techguylabs.com. Now, I can't pretend that I prepare or anything. It's not like I make copious notes before every show. No. I barely know what I'm going to talk about. But we do have people who write these things down as I talk. James DeRuvo right now is writing everything I say down and putting it up on the website, techguylabs.com. And then we add audio and video after the fact. Josh Windisch in my office does that. And basically, that site is designed to reflect the show accurately. So every show has its own page. Within that page, every hour has its own page. Within that hour, every question or segment has its own page. And you can go there. You can read it. It's free. There's no sign up or anything. It's just, boom. You just go there. TechGuyLabs.com. There's a good search tool so you can find it. What did Leo say about drones? And you can find that quickly. TechGuyLabs.com. If you do want to leave a comment, we do ask you to log into your Twitter or Facebook or Google Plus account. That way, it reduces spam. That's it. I don't collect that information. I don't want to know that information. And I certainly don't charge you for any of this. This is, and thank our advertisers, because this is all, the whole thing, the studio, the fabulous music played by our amazing musical director, Michael Cozio, the incredible salary that we pay to Kim Schaffer, our phone, what are you laughing at, Kim? Our phone rate, all of that is paid for by our fine advertisers. So just, you know, take advantage of that, techguylabs.com. I did finally, you know, I have a bad history with drones. First drone I bought, my friend, Father Robert Ballester, the digital Jesuit, who we call the Quad Father because he's such a drone fanatic. He said, Leo, don't buy an expensive drone. You'll just lose it and crash it. And we, you know, for the studio, we had a DJI Phantom, one of the first. We used it for, you know, kind of helicopter style shots and so forth. But he said, you know, you're going to crash, so get a $40 SEMA drone. You can get them on Amazon, SYMA. They're cheap. That way, if you crash it, you won't feel so bad. So I took his advice. And I was so excited that first time. I charged up the batteries, got out the remote control, read the instructions carefully, put the SEMA, turned it on, put the drone down on the, you know, these four-blade quadcopters. They're really amazing because they're very stable platforms. You control them with your smartphone. And I mean, they're just remote control aircraft, but they're easy to fly. And I said, this is my first takeoff. I pushed that lever forward. The drone starts going up, and then it keeps going up. And I go, okay, good height. And I pulled it back. Nothing happens. Keeps going up. Fiddled with it. Pressed all the buttons. Keeps going up. It was like a helium balloon that you let go. It just kept going. till it was a little dot in the sky and then disappeared. And I never saw that drone again. I have no idea what happened to it. I just lost it. I looked around the neighborhood. You know, fortunately, it's very light. It's cheap drone. Good news. It wouldn't have hurt anybody if it had fallen out of the sky. Chances are it's in a tree somewhere, but I never saw it again. Okay. Round one, chalk it up to inexperience. Went out and got the drone you cannot crash from Parrot AR, which created this category, really, of smartphone drones. And really, these drones are based a lot on smartphone technology, the accelerometers, the small processors. So the Parrot AR, it was called the Bebop. I saw David Pogue, a Yahoo Tech. He did a great, how you can't go wrong with this. It can't crash. Crashed it immediately. First flight into a tree. It bent it somehow. And now, from then on, every time I tried to take off, it would just flip over on its side. And that was that. So I thought, me and drones, we don't go together. I've wasted a lot of money now. I'm done. But see, I'm never really done. My friend Alex Lindsay, who's a very talented video guy, said, oh, no, you're going to love this new from DJI, which is kind of the best-known name in drones. These new portable drones, they're so smart. And he convinced me to spend $1,000 on it's called a Mavic Pro, and it folds up. In fact, you can carry it in a small man-purse-sized pouch. It unfolds. Now, of course, even though it may not legally be required, there seems to be some question about that because of court cases. But I went to the FAA site, read all the rules, registered the drone, put the FAA number on the drone and everything. I want to be good. This thing has a very good quality 4K camera. You shoot 4K video. It's rock solid. I'm not going to say you can't crash it. You can. I can crash anything. I haven't crashed it yet, though. Been flying it all week. Just blown away by the quality of the video I'm getting from this thing. And the fact that I can fold it up like this, that is pretty cool. So it's the Mavic, M-A-V-I-C Pro from DJI. They make a couple of foldable drones, but this one's one of the more expensive. One thing I will note is the technology. This is the fifth generation of drones at this point. The technology has come a long way. This thing will follow you. If you put it in a There's a number of follow modes where it will continually point at you, recognizes you point at a person, somebody on the skateboard. You point it, you touch the screen because it attaches to your iPhone or your Android phone. And you touch the screen and say, follow that. And then as you move the drone around, the camera follows that person, just really makes for amazing, you know, movie quality shots. It also has a tracking mode where if you're a skier or a bicycler, you can have it follow you just above your head behind you as you bicycle. And it will just automatically follow you, things like that. Gorgeous video. So I wanted to put a plug in because finally I found a drone so far. Now, next week, ask me again. I can't crash so far. This is the Mavic Pro from DJI. And I just love it that it's so portable and you can carry it over your shoulder. Bring it with you on hikes and so forth. And I've been able to get some great video. You know what we'll do? I'm going to do a full review of it on our new screensaver show on the Twit Network this afternoon. And we'll put some video up that I shot with it so you can see it in action. I think you'll be impressed by the quality of the video. That's this afternoon we're doing that show, but you'll find it at twit.tv. That's my podcast network /NSS for new screensavers. We'll put it there. Really, really an amazing technology. Sounds silly when I say it, but technology is pretty cool. It's been a while since I found something where I went, gee, this is space age. This is pretty amazing. May happen in a couple of days. Day after tomorrow, Tuesday, the 12th, Apple will be revealing its new iPhone. 10th anniversary iPhone. That for that reason alone, Apple and everybody is expecting Apple's going to do something pretty special. Been lots of rumors, and of course, as you get closer to the phone shipping, the rumors get more accurate because, well, they're making them. So they leak out of China and so forth. OLED screen fills almost the full screen. No touch ID, no fingerprint. They couldn't get that working in time. But apparently, Face ID that recognizes your face almost anywhere you're positioned, so it's very quick and easy. I'm not sure, and we'll talk about it when the phone comes out and we know what the actual features are. I'm not sure I would trust Face ID. Samsung put it in its Galaxy S8, and it was cracked almost immediately by the Chaos Computer Club out of Berlin. Somebody could take a picture of you and unlock your phone. You probably want to use a passcode and not Face ID. On the other hand, the convenience, man. New cameras, sure. Faster chip, probably. But we'll find out on Tuesday. Maybe that'll be another device where I go, wow, we really are living in the future. And maybe not. 8888 Ask Leo. All right, I know where my future lies with your phone calls. Next, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. The phone number. On we go. Real quickly, before I get to Joe in Phoenix, hang on, Joe, you're next. I do want to mention, we talked about at the beginning of the show, but if people are just joining us, we talked quite a bit about the Equifax breach. There is lots of information on our webpage at techguylabs.com. Bottom line, I don't trust Equifax to tell us if you've been affected or not. 143 million records apparently gained by bad guys in a breach that occurred or was discovered by Equifax, discovered on July 29th. They didn't tell us for 5 weeks, giving three of their executives time to sell their Equifax stock. Now Equifax has put up a website saying, hey, give us the last six of your social and your last name. We'll tell you if you were affected. I don't buy it. A number of people have put in random names and numbers and said, oh, yeah, you were affected. Don't give Equifax any more of your data. Stop. They say, well, we'll give you a year free credit monitoring. A year? A year? This breach is going to affect all of us for many years to come. And I can guarantee you that year of free credit monitoring will turn into paid on day 366. Stay away from Equifax. If you're worried, you might want to put a fraud alert on all four of the credit reporting agencies, TransUnion, Equifax, Experian, and Innovis. That will require them to contact you before giving out any of your information. That's what these companies specialize in, collecting your personal information and giving it to people who ask for it for a price. That's their business model. You'd think, given that we didn't offer this information, they would do everything in their power to protect it. They didn't. Releasing vital information for many Americans. I don't buy the number. It could be more. I bet you over time we'll hear it is more. I don't buy anything Equifax says at this point. Check with your financial institution. Most financial institutions, many credit cards, offer some form of credit monitoring. Take advantage of that free offer. And then there are companies like LifeLock, AAA, that do this as well. I use LifeLock, and I actually spend a lot of money every year for credit monitoring because I'm in the public eye. I would be a target, so I make sure I do everything I can to monitor my credit. But I think putting a fraud alert on isn't a bad idea. You could even do a credit freeze, which will cost you money. Both fraud alerts and credit freezes have to be renewed periodically. Check with Equifax, TransUnion, Experian, Innovis to see how it works. I think when I get home, that's probably what I'm going to do is put a fraud alert on all my accounts and continue to monitor and keep it going. It's important to have monitoring plus the fraud alert because there's other, you know, now that the data is out there, there's other ways bad guys can use it. You want to know if it's being used. The fraud alert The idea of the fraud alert is to keep people from applying for credit in your name, but there's other things they can do. So, which is all, you know, thank you, Equifax. You screwed it up for everybody. I hope you're happy now. In some cases, I guess a credit freeze does not have to be renewed. It will cost you money to put it on there, and it can be inconvenient because if you do want to apply for credit, you have to use a PIN or somehow notify the agencies. It's okay to release the information to this guy. I think that sounds like a good idea. They don't, by the way, they don't want you to do this because this is how they make money, is giving your information to other people. So they don't want you to freeze your your data, because then they can't make any money off of you. Freeze it. Let's put them out of business. They deserve it. Now, sorry, got on my high horse. Joe, Phoenix, Arizona, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Joe.
Good afternoon. I have a question I did not have before I called you.
Okay.
How do you spell Dr. Jason Fong's last name?
Oh, yeah. We were talking in the break about F-U-N-G, Jason Fong. He is the guru of fasting. But I don't want to recommend it on the radio to a general audience because I'm not a doctor and you shouldn't listen to me for diet advice.
Sure
he is. He's a nephrologist working out of Toronto. And if you Google Jason Fung, you'll find his books and his blog and his YouTube videos. And I think they're very good, personally.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
My pleasure.
My question, I'm 76 years old. I do not understand computers. I've got to buy a new computer. What would be probably
I'm so glad you're asking, because I think people just kind of go into default mode because it's challenging, it's complicated, and it's very expensive, and they go, well, they use PCs at work, I'm going to get a Windows machine, or my grandson says Macs are great, so I'm going to get a Mac. In most cases, we don't need to buy general purpose computers anymore. General purpose computers like PCs and Macs can do anything. But that means that they are security nightmares because they can do anything. So I generally tell people what you want to do is surf the web, do your online banking, send and receive email, that kind of thing, right? Watch movies.
That's probably more than I will do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for most people, either a tablet or a Chromebook are the solutions I recommend. Much less expensive than a general purpose PC. Almost fully secure. I mean, if you're banking on a Chromebook, I feel safe, absolutely safe to do that. So Chromebooks come from Google. They made a very stripped down version of an operating system that is locked down completely. It is beautifully done. They range in price from $250 to $500. They're laptops. They also make desktops if you want. You can get a Chrome box, which will hook up to any keyboard, mouse, and monitor and become a full-size desktop. They're just a Chrome browser, but that's for most people, that's all they do. If you're doing Facebook and email and watching movies and all that stuff, Chromebooks are perfect.
Now, would they be found like a Best Buy?
Absolutely. In fact, I would go to Best Buy and just look at them.
Okay.
Just do some research. You can certainly buy them on Amazon. They're all over the place. It's one of the best-selling categories now of PCs, and I think rightly so. Unless you know that you need to design rocket ships.
Well, I was going to do that. But I can't. I'm just really...
I know. I gave up on that a few years ago.
Now,
so
I got a brochure the other day. It's called Wow. It says a simple-to-use...
Yeah. I've tried the Wow. It's for seniors. It's okay. Their heart's in the right place, but they're basically, it's a Linux computer. I think a Chromebook is a better choice for most people.
Well, then I'll go buy one now then.
The other thing to look at while you're out there is an iPad. A little more expensive. Doesn't have a keyboard, but you can get a keyboard that works with it. And, of course, you have to buy apps from the Apple iPad store. But for most people, an iPad, my mom lives on her iPad. For many people, that's all you need. Both iPads and Chromebooks are very secure.
So that'll be my decision, right?
Yep. It's up to you. It's the form factor you like. But I think you're right to ask, do I really need a PC or a Mac? No, I would say not.
No, I don't think I do either.
Yeah, save your money.
I appreciate your wisdom. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. I'm glad you called. It's a great question. I think most of the time we're just kind of on automatic. Nah, I'm just going to buy that. I'm at Costco. I see a PC. I'll buy it. And you're buying a lot of problems. You really are. And gosh knows, thanks to Equifax, we got plenty of problems without doing that. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He is everywhere. Johnny Jett, he's joining us now. From an undisclosed location in Arlington, Texas.
I'm in Arlington, Texas.
You're having a sports weekend. This is exciting.
I am. And I was just looking at the chat room, and you can hear Jack in the background. they were saying that the nachos were invented at the Texas Ranger Stadium. And it's true. And I just came from lunch where the Irish nachos were invented at this Irish bar that we went to.
So there was a guy named Nacho who used to make these. And Howard Cosell, apparently, was the guy who popularized them during a Monday night football game. He said, "What are these things called? Are they nachos? Are they nachos?" And he ate them, and it's the ballpark nachos with the kind of yellow, I hesitate to call it cheese, yellow stuff on
cheese
the
whiz.
Cheese. Well, it's cheese, jalapeno juice. I read the recipe.
Jalapenos.
And jalapenos.
Maybe some onions.
No. You're giving it more credit than it really deserves. It's basically cheese whiz with jalapeno juice in it over tortilla chips. But it's very good. Yeah, they invented that there, huh?
It's good for you, too.
Well, it cleans out the sluices, I'll say that. So, Johnny, what are you doing in Arlington?
I am doing it. Actually, I'm here with my wife. She's doing a Pinterest work, and I'm her plus one. But
nice.
Part of the perks of traveling with my wife, I get to go to the ball game. So they got me tickets to see the Giant Cowboys tomorrow and the Yankees Rangers. So I'm going to go.
Oh, man, you're in heaven.
Across the parking lot. You walk across the parking lot. You can go to two games in the same day.
That's heaven. So, and it's the NFL opener down there for the Cowboys.
It is Sunday Night Football.
Although, we San Francisco 49ers fans call them, the Cowgirls. don't do that down there, though.
Stadium is beautiful. They wouldn't go for a tour of the stadium. They do these, you know, and my wife's like, my God, you can eat off these floors in the stadium.
That's because the season hasn't started yet.
I've got a tour during the season, too.
Wait till 100,000 fans load the place up.
Yeah.
So Johnny joins us talking about travel each week, using travel technology to travel better. Yeah, go ahead. A couple of things. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I created a travel resource page for anyone who's getting hit by Hurricane Irma, who their travel plans are being affected. I have every airline's policy, cancellation policy, cruise line, things to do. Travel wise, obviously it's not safety wise, but there's all kinds of maps in there and things like that. So check that out. I just put it in the chat room. I'll tweet it out after this thing, and you guys can hopefully put it in the show notes. And then one other thing, I always give you a tip. So, I wrote a tip this week in one of my newsletters, and it was really popular, and I was shocked how popular it is, about be aware of thieves on planes. People don't realize that, one of the new trends, especially on long-haul flights, and actually this tip came in from a reader, and it was on a flight to China. They said it's really bad going to China, but I think it's everywhere. You have to be aware of it. When you go on a long-haul flight and you fall asleep or go to the bathroom, you got to be aware of your belongings up top or underneath your seat.
Wait a minute. I always assumed it was safe because somebody, to be a thief on a plane, you had to buy a plane ticket. You say bad guys do that?
Yeah, they buy the plane tickets and then they make off like bandits. They go in people's bags.
Well, yeah, because I bring my most expensive stuff. I don't check it. We talked about that before. Cameras, computers, we bring them on board.
And cash. So this reader who sent it in to me said all of a sudden they noticed right before they get off the plane that their bag was missing or their money was missing and their jewelry. And they remember someone going up into the overhead bin.
Wow.
And they screamed and told everyone, no one get off the plane, and people weren't listening. And all of a sudden people started looking at their bags. They're like, oh my God, we were robbed too.
So but they got the guy. He's on the plane. Don't let anybody off. He's there, right?
Well, you don't know. If they're in the front of the plane, it's too late. So anyway, I just want people to be aware of thieves on the plane. You have to be. So always look at your bag. So a lot of times when I fly, I'll put my carry-on bag over the seat and the person across the aisle from me. That way I can keep my eye on it. Because if someone's going over your body, over you, you can't see what they're doing.
Wow.
Does that make any sense? I don't know.
I would have never thought this because I just I feel like that's, once you, for instance, I don't worry about the airplane waiting areas because you got to get through security with a ticket. I figure you're safe once you get in there, but I guess not.
Yeah. And then my friend, I put this on my Facebook as well. One of my friends was like, well, I was actually flying business class. I got up to use the bathroom and I quickly turned around to get something else from my bag. And my seatmate was going through my purse. So you just got to kind of be aware. And that's what I'm trying to get the message out. You don't want to start your vacation off on the wrong foot.
I'm going to put my valuable stuff under the seat. Is that safe?
Well, just make sure you have an eye on them, or you can put one of those things around your neck.
Sometimes I'll handcuff my bag.
Well, on trains, that's what we did when we when we take the trains at night in Europe. In Italy, I would sleep with the bag.
Yeah, I'll put my leg through the backpack strap or something like that, so that if somebody tries to take it, at least they'll pull on my leg. Yeah.
Or take turns if you're traveling with someone. Take turns. Wow. Just keep an eye on it. I mean, I don't want you to be a freak about it, but you just keep an eye on it.
Well worth reading in this month's Wired magazine, Andy Greenberg wrote an amazing story called The Hotel Room Hacker, about Aaron Cashat, who figured out how to make a small device that would fit in an eyeglasses case that would unlock almost any electronic hotel room door. And for years, I mean, another place you feel safe, right? He was going into hotel rooms. It took him 30 seconds or less to unlock the door, walk in. There was always luggage there. He'd throw everything in the room into the luggage, walk out through the lobby with his luggage behind him. They finally caught him. He's in jail now. But the scary thing is many of these locks are still out there and still being used. So,
first I heard of that one.
Yeah, that's another one to keep in mind if you're curious. Another place. You just got to watch everything like a... I feel like this is the paranoid show this week. They're everywhere. Yeah.
Yes. So I do have something that's not...
yes, please. Something happy, paranoid. Johnny. Something happy.
Yes. So here's an app for you. So it's called RV Parks and Campgrounds.
Okay.
So the website is actually parkadvisor.com, but it's a free app on both iOS and Android. And so this was developed to help find great RV parks in North America, USA, Canada, and Mexico. And they have over 40,000. So, you know, if you ever go camping or we just want to check out parks, it's a really good resource to know. You can zoom in on the map and you can find even, you know, gas stations or rest areas or stores, whatever you're looking for.
Nice.
So I don't think you're a big camper, and I'm not either.
Well,
but
as I get older, I'm thinking of retiring, and it's either a boat or an RV. I don't know which.
Hey, RVs?
Yeah, I think I might drive around the country, see the world. Lisa and I want to do as a test next year, maybe start in, well, what's left of the Florida Keys and go up the eastern seaboard and see, you know, in the fall and see, go all the way up and see the leaves. But so I thought that'd be kind of fun.
You know,
I know the area, and you know, yeah. I'd love to do that. Go to Charleston, and it'd be fun. But anyway, that Washington D.C. I thought we'd do that maybe next year. So this will be useful. Places you can stay in your RV,
and not only that, also where places you know that are RV friendly stores.
Yes.
Like, you know, they list all the WalMarts and Costco, Sam's Club.
It's kind of it's an amazing community, the RV community. I've noticed that.
Yeah. It is. I've never driven in one. I've been in one, but
You can rent them, and that's what I'm going to do. You can rent nice RVs.
Yeah, I think I mentioned that website a long time ago. I can't remember which one it is.
That's the one I'm using.
There's actually a smaller one you can do, Juicy.
Did you see that Lux, which was the parking valet service you'd recommended a couple of years ago, just got bought by Volvo, and they're going out of the parking valet business, I'm sorry to say.
The website I recommended or the app, they got bought?
L-U-X-E, they got bought.
Yeah. Wow.
Out of the business.
And so they bought it and they're just taking it out?
Yeah, well, they actually pivoted last year. They stopped doing it. I think there wasn't a lot of money. The idea is a guy come on a scooter and take your car anywhere in the city, park it, and bring it back to you. Maybe Volvo will revive it. Thank you, Johnny Jet. JohnnyJet.com. For more information, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I love Jack in the background there.
You can hear Jack.
He's so cute. Yeah, of course. He's adorable.
Here, Matt, bring me Jack.
Are you taking him to the ball game?
No, it's too loud for him.
Yeah.
So
our baby's first ball game. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. Mike is on the line from Bath, Maine. Hello, Mike.
Hello.
Hey, welcome. What can I do for you? Hello.
Hold on, Mike.
Hello, Bath, Maine.
Oh, Bath, Maine. Okay, because you said you had another mic on there.
Well, there may be, but you're the mic I want to talk to.
Great. My X58 MSI motherboard gave up a few months ago, so I sorted it out. And now I'm upgraded to an X299.
You built the computer yourself?
I built it, yeah. I built the original one when Windows was first offered, or Windows 7 was offered as a beta test, and I had to steal the drivers Asus to make it work with. Wow. MSI.
Good. MSI makes great motherboards. What can I do to help you? You got your nice new one going.
Well, I got it running, but I don't have an operating system on it because I wanted, I got cheap. I spent all the money on all the other stuff to move it over. And
it's time for Linux, my friend.
I still want to run the Windows for a while.
Oh, okay. All right.
Anyways, so most of the parts are the original machine. I upgraded where it was necessary. The power supply, the hard drives, the video card for now is from the original machine. And I went and downloaded an ISO and created a
You use Microsoft's Media Builder, and you created a Windows 10 install disk, I take it.
Yeah, well, a key, you know, a little USB drive.
Yeah.
Anyways, when I put it in there, it goes, Windows cannot read the product key, the setting from the unattended answer file. And I have no idea how to deal with that.
It should install, even if it doesn't activate. That's the normal way that these things go. You can download Windows 10 and install it on any computer, even if you don't, you know, you didn't buy it, and it will run for 30 days, and they'll say, okay, now you got to pay for it. So there's something wrong that is beyond just not having a registered copy of Windows. It's something going on with the installer.
Okay. I downloaded the key a couple times. Maybe I'll have to try again.
You're using, you know, it's not unusual to have problems making a boot key for a Windows machine. You're using Microsoft's Media Creation Tool to do it?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I usually use Rufus, R-U-F-U-S. You might look at trying. It's a free download, R-U-F-U-S, and it makes a bootable. Sometimes bootable USB keys can be tricky. I'm not sure if. It should be an EFI key. Needs to be support UEFI. It also needs to be support the, you know, secure boot, which Microsoft has turned on, I'm sure, on their MSI motherboard. So all of that stuff needs to be right. I bet you it's just a bad USB key because you shouldn't get that error message. You should get an install. Yep. The worst case, and I think this will happen to you, you've changed enough of it, is it'll say, well, now it's time to buy Windows. It's not going to recognize the fact that you run Windows on that machine before because it's...
No, am I... If I call them, will they allow it? Or will
sometimes, If you explain to them what you changed. So Microsoft is not completely clear on how it figures this out. It somehow looks at all your hardware, makes a hash, and then says, you know, stores it in a database. And once you've installed Windows 10 on any machine, you have what's called an entitlement to install it again and again and again. And it bases it on that hash. It doesn't. That's the only way it knows your machine. So if you change, and it doesn't say how much, but if you change a certain number of things, I'm thinking probably the MAC address of the Ethernet card, the motherboard. But if you changed enough that it looks like a new PC. Okay. However, you may be able to call them and say...
The motherboard is going to do a lot of that because
that's right.
The motherboard
it's got the Ethernet and everything's on the motherboard.
Right, and then the phone...
So you just say I changed the motherboard, but it's the same PC, and see if they'll say, okay, we'll activate you.
Okay, because otherwise, I mean, it isn't that bad to just go out and buy another copy.
It's not that expensive. No. And once you've done it on that machine, you know, then you can wipe the drive and reinstall. You don't need to remember a key or anything. It just knows.
Yeah, and so I may go that route. Another thing I noticed is when I was putting it together, it said to put the memory into two different slots, and then when I powered it up, it said, oh, don't put it there, move it here. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, memory has sometimes, because they interleave memory, they sometimes have to be in specific slots, et cetera, et cetera. This is all voodoo. This is why I tell people don't build a machine unless you decide you really want to learn about all this stuff.
Yeah, no, this is different than usual because I picked the slots that it said use A1 and C1.
That's for interleaving, yeah.
Right. And then when I put it in there, it said, oh, no, move it over to here.
Yeah, they maybe have changed how they, you know, that's MSI's might have changed how they spec it.
Okay, because outside of that, I love the other board.
I think they're good.
Out of it.
Yeah.
I kind of like build more than I need to start with, so then it will age gracefully.
It is a lot of fun to build your own PC, as long as you understand that these are the problems you're going to have. There's no one to call for support, because if you call MSI, they'll say, well, it's not our problem. Why don't you call the hard drive manufacturer? Call Microsoft. Nobody wants to take responsibility. That's why it's all on you. But then you learn how to solve these things. It's a hobbyist thing. You don't save money. You don't save time, but you learn a lot.
Oh, yeah. No, I've enjoyed all the builds. I've been building since the 90s, and I figured this might be one of my last builds.
Yeah, so. I keep saying that every time.
Oh, yeah.
This is the last computer I'm ever going to buy. That hasn't happened yet, thank goodness. Have fun, and yeah, try Rufus. I think Rufus is very good at making bootable USB disks.
Just take the ISO over and run it through Rufus.
Yeah, when you run Rufus, you could pick an ISO. You could say, use this ISO. It'll probably fix the problem.
Great.
All right.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. It's a fun fraternity, the geek fraternity. But for most people, it's a fraternity you don't want to join. You don't. David in Santa Ana, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, David.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm well. Welcome.
Good. I had a call regarding my mother received a call regarding some company telling her that she had something wrong with their machine that was affecting their site.
This makes me so angry, because these people are generally really preying on older adults who are not sophisticated. Because they call up, they say, hello, this is Windows calling, and there's something wrong with your machine. We can see it on our telemetry. And your mom, she doesn't know. She goes, oh, my gosh, what? Well, and he says, well, here's what I want you to do. There's a program you should run, and she runs the program. It's the Event Viewer. Do you see any red X's? Oh, yeah, they're all over the place. That's normal. Oh, my goodness, we have a problem here. So, and they usually do a couple of things. They either say, for $300, we'll fix it and we'll keep it fixed for the next year or two or three. But then they also ask for remote access to your computer. So there's three problems here. One, they've got a credit card number. Two, they've got $300. Three, when they get remote access to the machine, who knows what they're doing? They could put other stuff on there. It's a scam. Right. You know that, right?
Yes.
Mom didn't know, because
this is not the first time, Leo.
Yeah, but she's trusting, and you know it happens.
Yes.
And every time they call me, I say, Shane, I say, it doesn't help. I say, does your mother know that you are preying on older people, taking advantage of them? And then they always hang up. So,
right.
But I try to make them guilty. It doesn't work.
The first time this happened, she actually called a company because she was having problems with her printer, and they put her into one of these queues that, charged her $300.
Now, if you're calling, if you're making an outbound call, you're not calling a scammer, probably. I mean, it depends where she got that number. But she should know. No, anybody who calls you, first of all, they don't know anything. They're calling every number.
Right. And that was the first time. And then this last time, it was somebody that called her, and she let them into the computer and gave them the admin password.
Of course she did.
And
so that computer is compromised.
Yeah, I went through it trying to remove anything I could find in the
registry. But the problem is you don't know what they did. And they could have put a rootkit on there that you wouldn't even be able to see. I mean, I doubt they're that sophisticated. In fact, in most cases, all they want is the money, and they don't do anything bad. But you don't know. So
they were sophisticated enough, they deactivated my admin account.
Oh, that's bad. That's a bad sign.
Yeah, so
that's a bad sign.
I no longer have that kind of control.
Yeah,
I was wondering I create a boot disk off of that thing now.
Yeah, that would help.
Is that going to be compromised as well? When
just depends what they did. Probably not, though. You can download a new boot disk, make a new boot disk for her. You're going to want to reinstall Windows if you can. I gather she's not local.
No, she's here in Santa Ana.
Okay, if you can go over there. Best thing you could do, reinstall Windows and put a big sign on her machine that says, Mom, just don't. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's, it's just terrible. I feel like we live in a world of scammers. It's a breakdown of the social order. And just shameful. Shameful. I've only gotten calls like that a couple of times. But both times I was in the car. So I had a little time. I there are people who will keep them on the line and mess with them. I don't do that. But I don't know. Hey, have you ever had your DNA mapped? You know, it's not expensive. And it really is fascinating. I use 23andMe. Did this a few years ago. One of the things I like about 23andMe is as new genetic research comes out, let me log into my account. They add to the information that they share with you, which is awesome. 23andme.com/twit. You don't have to go to a lab. You don't have to go to a doctor. You don't have to give a blood sample. You just spit into a vial. I'm not kidding. That's all you have to do. And they take the saliva. There's enough DNA in that saliva. They can break it down. And you can learn so much about where your ancestry comes from, what traits you have, wellness information. The Ancestry Report's amazing. I'll show you mine. You can see this is actually my 23andMe. By the way, one thing that's really cool, you can download your DNA analysis and use it in other, through other machines and other software if you want. So you actually get the raw data from this. So I'm 39% British and Irish. Mostly European, 100% European. So, but this kind of matches what I thought. A little Italian. A little Jew. I didn't know I had Ashkenazi Jewish in there. See? Now when you invite me to your Seder, Dr. Mom, I can go. But you can also, I love this stuff. I just love this. You can find out how much Neanderthal you have. This is actually an example of something new. It was only in 2010 that they found Neanderthal DNA samples in bone fragments. And they were able to figure out that, yes, many of us do have some Neanderthal in us. I have 265 Neanderthal variants in my DNA. That's a fairly small amount, less than 4% of my overall. But that's fascinating. You can find long-lost relatives if you want. Now, this is a privacy thing, so you can say, I don't want anybody to find me. But I turned that on because I thought that was kind of cool. I could see who's related to me. I even found a second cousin based on DNA matches. They're calculating this right now. And his last name was the same as my grandmother's maiden name. So I know we're related. It's so cool. I want you to try it. 23andme.com. Find out where your DNA comes from. And you know what a great gift. We're going to give it. Don't tell Poppy and Grandma. We're going to give it to my in-laws for Christmas. Because it's even better if you've got everybody involved. You can also, and this is really nice, answer questions. They have a phenotype questionnaire. You can answer a few questions. I do it over, every once in a while I'll answer a few more questions. And that helps them build a database of what genes relate to what traits, which is so cool. I likely cannot taste bitter, but I prefer salty to sweet. That's true. Likely little upper back hair, no bald spot, no cheek dimples, no cleft chin, but probably detached earlobes, wet earwax, darker eyes. My ring finger is likely longer. Oh, that's interesting. Likely a lot of freckles, wavy or straight hair. Wait a minute, what does that mean? Likely straight or wavy? Well, isn't that? Oh, but not curly. I love this. So this is based on stuff that they've found out by asking people questions like, is your hair curly? And they can match it up. Really, really cool. If you want to find out more, go to 23andme.com/twit. Discover where you come from, what makes you you, your unique genetic profile. 23andme.com/twit. What will be your DNA destination? I love this. It's just so cool. And like I said, it would be a great gift. I'm predisposed to weigh less than average. this is great stuff. 23andme.com/twit. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yeah, it's time. Time to talk. I'm sorry. I apologize to all the long-suffering spouses. Every day we have visitors come to the studio, often couples, and I usually ask, well, all right, who dragged whom? And usually there's the fan of the show, most often a guy, not always, and then their spouse, who's usually there, not under protest, but not exactly thrilled. Yeah, they say. I hear you all the time, in the car, in the house, in the bedroom. Nice to finally meet you. Well, I'm sorry if you're one of those long-suffering spouses, but I am glad you're here. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. We'll try to make this fun. Take all the pain out of being geeky. 888-827-5536. That's the phone number, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. We do have a great website, if I do say so myself. Well, I can't because I didn't design it. I don't even maintain it. We've got a team doing that. They write down everything I say, all the links and everything. They get put up there, techguylabs.com. And that's free. There's no sign-up. It's wide open. It's there for your use, and there's a good search. Every show, every question, every answer, they're all up there. Plus your comments, too, if you'd like to add them, and we do appreciate that. techguylabs.com. If you're on the line, hang on the line. I am going to keep recording. We like to record ahead a little bit so that we have fresh material when I'm not here. And I will be doing that after the show ends in about 45 minutes. So hang on the line, and we will take another 45 minutes of extra of calls. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's usually a good time to call in. There's not nearly as much competition to get on. To Rialto, California we go. Pamela is next. Hi, Pamela.
Hi, Leo.
I am great. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So glad to hear your voice.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Enjoy your vacation.
Mm.
I used to use Adobe Streamline, and what it would enable me to do would be to scan line drawings, capture them. I think it turned them into TIFFs.
Oh.
And then I was able to manipulate them, color them, make patterns or what have you.
Now, yeah, it's what they call a line tracing program, and it's been discontinued.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
It's impossible to find that.
The reason is they put that feature into one of their more profitable programs, a program called Illustrator.
Okay.
Illustrator does exactly the same thing. They call it Image Trace, but it's exactly the same thing. And the reason is people use Illustrator to create line drawings, vector graphics of things, and it's often easiest to take a picture of something and then put it in Illustrator, and it turns it into a manipulatable object so that you can stretch it, change it, scale it, color it in, and all that. So all the things that you used to do. But Illustrator is expensive.
Yes.
However, if that's what you want.
I got to buy it then,
You got to buy it. Although they now don't even let you buy it. You have to subscribe.
Yeah, I noticed that with I bought a laptop recently. I bought four, actually. And I bought Windows for everybody. And it's the same thing. I have to download it.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Well, nobody buys. Where would you go to buy software? There's no software stores anymore. I guess you could still go to Office Depot or Staples or somewhere, but Costco.
I got it from Best Buy.
Yeah. Nowadays, exactly. There's no, people don't buy software in boxes. And worse, they want you to subscribe, which means they get an annual or monthly fee from you.
Right.
So Adobe has moved almost, I would say everything has moved over now to monthly subscriptions.
The only software that exists that lets me do that would be Illustrator, right?
No. So your question, I know, is to, well, what else besides Illustrator? CorelDRAW, I think, will do it. I don't know if it'll be as good. I mean, Zara, X-A-R-A, I haven't used any of these because I am no artist. Zara Extreme, X-A-R-A. Now, it has a bitmap tracer, so it's a little bit different. It turns it into dots, so it's not scalable. Although Zara itself is a vector graphics program, much like Illustrator. So XARA would be another one to look at. I think most, you know, the truth is one of the reasons Adobe did this is Illustrator is the king of the hill.
Sure.
For vector graphics. And so, sure. You know.
Well, the thing about it is that when I was learning how to do all these things, I learned on CorelDRAW. It's like,
yeah.
I use Publisher a lot because I'm comfortable with it. That's the only thing.
So, right.
Okay.
That's how Adobe gets you.
Sure. Of course.
And then there is an open source project called Inkscape that I've used on Linux. And I bet you there's a Windows version of that that is free. That's the advantage of it. Mm-hmm. As is often the case with open source software, it may have somewhat of a clunky interface. It may be a little hard to figure out. And it may go through periods of instability. It's at version 0.92. Yeah, there is a free version for Windows, Mac, and Linux. Inkscape.org. That'd be the first place I'd go and see if you could figure it out.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It was well worth the wait.
Yeah, I'm sorry we keep you on hold for so long. Your kids are going crazy, I can tell in the background.
No, well, that's okay.
Are they teenagers?
Territory.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
No, 11-year-old.
Oh, yeah, getting there. He'll be a teenager any day now.
Oh, I can hardly wait.
Oh, you're so lucky, Pamela. You know what? These are the best years of your life. You look back on this and go, wow. Because you forget all the work and suffering. And you only remember the good stuff.
Yeah, it's like childbirth.
Exactly. It's just an
odd. My mother said.
18 years of.
You'll remember the pain.
Exactly. Otherwise, there'd be no humans left.
There would be no children. That's right.
Take care. Thanks, Pamela.
Bye.
Jeffrey on the line next from Brooklyn, New York. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi. I have a question. Isn't coding the same as what I used to call in high school programming?
Yes, it is. It's just another way of another word for programming. Yep.
Yeah, I remember using key punch cards on an IBM 11.
Well, thank God we don't do that anymore, right? We've got a little. I think one reason people use the word coding, programming kind of does harken back to that day where you were flipping switches on the front of a computer or punching cards.
Yep, I remember that. Yep.
Yeah, and you were programming implies you're kind of teaching a computer how to do something. And modern computer programming really has changed in its mindset a little bit. You're thinking more about what is the problem we're trying to solve and how can we describe that problem. You think more about what you're trying to do than how you're trying to do it. So I think that, I mean, that's a very flimsy justification, but it's one of the reasons people often use the phrase coding instead of programming. Programming implies something kind of dusty and dull and dry. Coding's actually fun, but it's the same thing. It's exactly the same thing. It's not Fortran, but it's the same thing.
Yep, I remember Fortran.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
COBOL.
Yeah, COBOL. You know, what's funny is what goes around comes around. Roughly the same time as COBOL, Fortran, and assembly language in the 50s and early 60s, a guy named McCarthy, who was a mathematician, defined a language called Lisp that was basically a mathematical language. But it had some really interesting attributes that made it a little easier for people to understand what was going on and a little less likely, more importantly, a little less likely to create bugs. Lisp was kind of forgotten except for a few hardcore devotees for many decades. We went down the road of what they call imperative languages like C. Now we're coming back around to functional languages like Lisp. And because of the bug issue, people want languages that will be less prone to creating errors. So Lisp and its descendants are kind of back. It's interesting. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's why we call it coding, kids. Because it's in code. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm feeling the rapture. 8888, ask Leo. The phone number, Brian on the line from New York. Hello, Brian.
Hey, we go from Brooklyn right over to the Upper West Side, your old stomping
ground.
My
old home, yeah.
I know. So it's we miss you over here. You know, I know you're planning a fall foliage trip.
I think. Well, that's next
maybe
year.
Maybe if you'll let us know. Let us know when you're coming.
We'll do a I think we're going to do a Broadway trip this fall to see a few shows. I'm hoping to get tickets to see Bruce Springsteen. He's got a one-man show on Broadway. My friend Steve Martin's show is opening, Meteor Shower. That's going to be awesome, opening November 29th. So we'll be out there at some point. I'll let you know.
DNA test, let me know. And now that you got your DNA results back, we'll be sure to save you a spot in line over at Zabar's.
I love Zabar's. I'm going to Katz's. I'm going to Zabar's. They closed the Carnegie Deli, but Katz's will be fine.
Oh, yeah. Well, you'll check out some of the food halls they have.
Oh, man. There's some good food over there.
Gus's pickles to top.
Oh, now you're cooking.
Now we're talking.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, reason why I was calling today is I was going to be starting a search for a new Intel 8th generation Core laptop.
Wow. You're going to be waiting a little while.
Well, I think Dell has a few on the website
already.
Right now,
boy, they don't already take any time.
Yeah,
holy cow!
Because, you know, that's how it is. You know what? Why buy?
So I'm, Intel. The last, say, four generations has made new processors that have not particularly been big improvements. So I guess the Coffee Lake, which is the eighth generation. Was announced a couple of weeks ago, and you're saying Dell already has some. Wow. I thought it'd be a little longer.
Yeah, they already had some. They're trickling through, like, if there's a distribution chain.
If they announce it, the problem is you have to then design a laptop. I would hesitate to run out and buy a laptop, brand new generation of Intel processors. And where I get this from is Skylake. Skylake had some real issues with power management. And a number of Skylake computers, well, most notably Microsoft, it took them about 8 months to make Skylake work properly with its power management. Apparently, Lenovo, which was able to make Skylake processors that worked fully, didn't have this problem. Microsoft famously said, well, how are you solving it? And Lenovo says, what problems? Except we know they, in fact, just turned off those features. So they didn't implement them. And so I would not be the first to buy a new processor. I understand the desire to do so for a couple of reasons. One is, well, you want to have the latest and greatest. But two, it's future-proofing. If you buy a Coffee Lake now, well, it's going to last a little longer than if you bought a Skylake or Kaby Lake, which is the current generation today. You know, you might get another few months out of it before it's obsolete. I just don't see.
And I think actually, it's actually Kaby Lake Refresh. I think that's what the eighth.
Well, that's the problem.
Yeah,
I'll tell you the real problem. These processors have gotten so good. There's not much they can do to make them better. They do slowly shrink the process. We're down to 15 nanometers, and there's 10 nanometers coming. But where do you go from 10 nanometers, you know?
I think they have, like, a quad core running on a very low power
envelope.
You know, so you have long battery life, and, you know.
Yeah, in theory. That's where you're going to see improvements, is not in speed so much as in power curves and things like that.
Yeah, so anyway, so I've been looking around, and the thing that's driving me crazy is that, all the laptops on the market seem to, for the most part, use like a 16:9 aspect ratio on the screen.
I know, and I'm not fond of that. That's why I like Microsoft. They're doing 3:2.
The whole thing is like, if you're going to use your machine solely for watching widescreen videos in 1920x1080 HD, I think that makes a lot of sense. But for a laptop user, I'm going to browse a web page, maybe get some touch on there, and the viewable height on it is so limiting that, I almost feel like boxed in right now. I don't know if I even want to buy a laptop at all.
I'm kind of with you. But there are people making 3:2 laptops, Microsoft the most notable. All the surfaces are 3:2. And one of the things I like about that is that's a better aspect ratio for a document. It's not as good for watching videos. You're going to have the black bars.
Yeah, but I mean, who black bars? I mean, how often do you want to watch it?
Well, that's the question. What are you using? It's really kind of the mediaification of computing. What are you using your computer for? If it's watching TV and movies, well, then you should get a 16:9 screen. But I agree with you. For document processing and surfing, 3x2 is very nice.
All right, so take a look at the Surface laptop.
Yeah.
I think Microsoft is going to be announcing its new version of that.
They're going to refresh it. They're going to
refresh it in October.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's, I think, a 13.3-inch screen, something like that, or somewhere along those lines.
The one I have right now looks like it's about 14. This is the Surface laptop. I'll tell you the negatives on it. Microsoft decided not to support Type-C, which is the future for both power and connectivity. There's no Type-C on it. There's that
connectivity.
Well, they're doing that stupid Surface connector, and I understand that's the connector for the whole family. But I think that's a mistake on their part. And so I don't know who else makes 3x2. I'm a big fan of the Lenovo ThinkPads.
Other than MacBooks.
Macintosh is doing it too. And in fact, all the...
It's actually technically 16:10, right? So it's slightly different. But
yeah, but it's closer.
You definitely get... You also said Lenovo and their yoga.
Yeah, and I don't know if Lenovo... I have a yoga, which I am in love with. And in fact, I saw that Peter Bright, one of my friends who's a Windows journalist, said the same thing. He said, often when we review hardware, we're supposed to be objective, but I just can't be objective about the ThinkPad yoga. It is a computer to fall in love with, and I would not hesitate recommending that to anybody.
So that basically has a tablet mode in it as well.
Yeah, it folds over. It's a 2-in-1 is what we call it. Yeah, it's a 2-in-1. So he's writing for Ars Technica. He says, I've fallen in love with a laptop, the Lenovo ThinkPad X1 Yoga. He calls it, and this might be a little bit exaggerated, the platonic ideal of a modern laptop. Mm. I would certainly look at it. It is a 20, it's 14 inches, it's 20, either 1920 by 1080 or 2560 by 1440, depending on which screen you bought. I spent a little extra and got the OLED screen, which I really, really like.
So is that a 4K or somewhere in between 4K and?
Yeah, you can. 4K looks pretty good on it. Now you just said you don't want to watch movies.
Well, no. In terms of the resolution, I want to.
Resolution isn't technically 4K. No,
That's fine.
That'd be 2160. But
who would want 4K? What do you need all those pixels being pushed around on a 4K?
The OLED. One of the reasons I got the OLED screen is this is going to be my photo processing laptop. This is the one I have Lightroom on and. Topaz Labs and all the various photo processing stuff. So I wanted a very accurate, very good-looking screen. It does happen that it's a great movie device because you can tent it. You can fold the lid over, put it in tent mode with the keyboard behind it. Great for a airplane tray table. You put it right there. You can watch movies. It's just a fabulous laptop. I'm very happy with the Lenovos. And I think they're very well made. And I'll be honest with you, especially for a laptop, I wouldn't worry about whether it's Coffee Lake, KB Lake, or even Sky Lake. You know, there are other things that maybe are more important. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And by the way, Lenovo Type-C support is superb. It uses Type-C for a charger, which is – I'm not going to buy a laptop anymore that doesn't use Type-C charger because that way I can use anybody's charger. I don't have to use your proprietary $90 charger. Great keyboard. Best keyboard ever. And yes, if you lose Lenovo Perks, which is the corporate deal, you'll get 33% off, which I wish I'd known. I would have saved $1,000 on my yoga. Our show today brought to you, and then we'll get to your calls. Our show today brought to you by Fracture. I got to tell you about these guys. I love these guys. So photos are amazing. I mean, when we travel, when there's a special event, anytime I want to remember something, I bring my cameras and I take pictures. It could be just my smartphone. Actually, we're getting pretty good pictures with that these days. But it could also be your special heavy-duty, point-and-shoot or multi-frame camera. The next thing, though, is important. You take that great picture, And what do? You upload it. It's on Google Photos, Apple Photos. It just sits there. Do you look at it maybe once in a while? Maybe you print a book. Every once in a while, you get a great picture. I'm going to show you my favorite picture. My picture. This is my picture of the year. And I'll show you what I did because I love this picture so much. I printed it so that I could put it up on my wall. And I didn't just print it on paper. I printed it on glass using Fracture. I just love this picture. I took it in the Galapagos in June. And look how nice that looks. And I wish you could see it in person because when it's printed on glass, the contrast, the texture, the richness of the colors just comes alive. This is from Fracture at fractureme.com/podcast. Now, this is the giant size, but they have a variety of sizes. I'll show you a few more. In fact, I went through and I printed once I printed, I got this. I said, that's it. They're ready for framing, by the way. I'll show you how they come. So you can see here. They come, first of all, they're packaging them perfectly. They come on a cardboard backing that protects it. It pops out of the cardboard backing, but on the cardboard backing is the mounting screw. The glass is mounted on foam core on the back, and the foam core has a little hole for hanging. So you just hang that right on the wall, and everything you need is there to hang it. This is a picture I took a few years ago, 4 years ago now, at Henry's graduation. Black and white photo. I wish you could see it. Let me give you the close-up shot here. Because it really, there's something about glass. It just comes alive. There's a richness, even to the black and white, actually especially to the black and white. Now, you notice I have borders on these, and you can choose that. But you can also go in there and you can crop it appropriately. All you have to do is go to fractureme.com/podcast. And actually, we're going to get you 10% off your first order. So go over there, pick some pictures, and you can upload them to Fracture Me. It's very, very, fractureme.com. It's very, very easy to do. And you'll get them printed, and they come in a few weeks, and they just look gorgeous. Bunch of sizes. So I showed you the 21.5 by 28.5. That's the big size for the prints you want to put over the mantelpiece. And somewhere, well, it's in the box. I have little ones, but the smallest size is 4.8 by 6.4. So, you can get little ones, get a bunch of little ones, put them up on the wall all together. There's all sorts of things you can do with it. You can get them in portrait, landscape, and square format. Square is great for your Instagrams. If you are using a fancy camera, so this will come out of the box fitting. They're 4x3, so they'll come out of the box just right for your camera phone or your Instagrams. But if you're using a fancy camera, a 3x2 camera, as I use, you're going to want to go in the advanced editor, undo the generic cropping, and resize or crop it on your own. And then you can add the black border. I actually like the black border. It makes the photo stand out a little bit. Fracture process makes the color and contrast of the photo just pop. It looks beautiful. Everybody here who's looked at it, including John, goes, oh, that looks gorgeous. Are you doing an eclipse photo, you think, with what? This is just gorgeous. We could probably get you a deal, John. Just go to fractureme.com/podcast to get 10% off. Look at that. Isn't that great? Don't forget to select the tech guy when you go there so that they know you heard it about on our tech guy show. They're all handmade in Gainesville, Florida, U.S. source materials. It's a carbon neutral factory. They recycle glass. They're very, very good. Carbon neutral means you don't have to worry about the environmental impact, and you're going to get just beautiful, beautiful prints. Fractureme.com/podcast for 10% off. And we thank Fracture for their support for the Tech Guy Show and for making a product that I just love. We have Fracture prints all over the house now. We really love them. Fractureme.com/podcast. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Time to talk home theater. Scott Wilkinson. He couldn't join us last couple of hours, but he's on the line now via phone from Cedia, the big home theater installers expo in San Diego this year. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Leo.
How's Cedia been for you?
Oh, it's been fantastic. We're in San Diego this year. Lovely town. I love San Diego.
Me too.
Been great weather. The convention center is huge, and it's full of very interesting stuff.
Well, tell us.
Well, one of the biggest stories, I mean, as you know, we've talked about this many times, that 4K and HDR, high dynamic range, are becoming more and more commonplace. And they're also coming down in price. Sony, at this show, introduced what they call 4K for under 5K.
Wow.
So they're offering a projector. This is a projector now. And the Cydia is more of a projector show than a flat panel TV show because it's all about custom installation. And so Sony introduced their least expensive 4K HDR capable projector called the VPL VW285 ES. And when they say under $5,000, they mean $49.99
Yeah, okay. We'll be glad to have that penny. That's good.
Yeah, I will, yes. Yeah. However, that being said, this is a pretty remarkable projector. It gives you just about everything you want except what are called lens memories. So that is a system whereby you can change the aspect ratio by zooming the lens in and out to different amounts. So if you're watching a football game on TV, that's 16:9 aspect ratio. If you're watching a movie, that's on a wider screen, 2.35:1. And more expensive projectors give you the option of storing the zoom and lens shift and all these kinds of settings so that you can fill different sizes of screen. This lower cost Sony doesn't have that, but it has just about everything else. And it looks remarkable. We actually saw some side-by-sides produced by Sony, presented by Sony, so you got to take that with a grain of salt. But it looked mighty, mighty good.
So this is a big breakthrough because, in fact, I was asking you just the other day for projectors, 4K projectors, and there were a dearth of these.
There are.
Let alone at that price.
Normal prices. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I would have said before today you couldn't get into that for less than like $8,000 or $10,000.
I think that's what you did say. Is this a good idea? Is it a good TV or is it a compromised TV just to get it to that price?
Well, again, the only compromise that I can really see is this lack of what are called lens memory.
Not a big deal if you set it up in a fixed location, right?
If you set it up in a fixed location and you have a 16:9 screen, well, it depends. If you watch a lot of movies, you have to think to yourself, am I going to watch more movies or am I going to watch more TV?
So these lens settings are changed in between different kinds of content.
Correct.
It's not merely change a position of the projector.
No. It's if you want to watch 16:9 TV content and widescreen movie content,
what happens if you don't change it? Does it look weird?
No, it doesn't look weird. It just doesn't take up all of the... You get black bars on the screen.
I can live with that.
You can live with that. Yeah. Of course you can. Sure, yeah. Most of us can. So other than that, you're not giving up a whole heck of a lot. It's pretty amazing what Sony has done for $5,000. I mean, that's still a fair chunk of change. But as I said, it's half of what I would have said you needed to spend at minimum last week.
Yeah. Now, the other thing I asked you about projectors is HDR. So now it's 4K, yes. But it's not going to do HDR, or is
yes.
it?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Not only HDR 10, which is the main sort of type of HDR format that's on Ultra HD Blu-ray and on most streaming content that's HDR, but it also does this other format called HLG, called Hybrid Log Gamma, which is about to come on the scene to be used for live broadcasting. And we actually saw examples of that as well. HDR 10 and Dolby Vision, which is the other main format, really require some post-processing, post-production to do well. But HLG is intended for live broadcast, where you don't have any post-production. You've got it goes out live, right? Like sporting events or award shows, things like that. So the Sony projectors, all of them, now also do HLG, which is a very big deal, or will be. I'd say next year or whenever the Ultra HD broadcast system comes online, probably next year, maybe 2019, that's going to become a very big deal. So Sony has implemented that already, which is great. So we saw some beautiful pictures. Now, they also have more expensive projectors as well. They introduced a brand new laser illuminated projector for $25,000, which is $10,000 less than its competitor, the JVC, from JVC. And we saw a side-by-side comparison of it today, that the Sony at $10,000 less looked quite amazing. Beautiful.
Well, this sounds like a breakthrough product.
I mean, it really is.
Now, remember, CD is for home theater installers, and projectors Correct. Are really designed for a home theater. You need Correct. A special screen to get for high dynamic range, where you get a really big spread between the brightest brights and the darkest darks. Can you use a regular screen, or do you need a special?
Yeah, you sure. No, you can use a regular screen. In fact, the best situation is a totally blacked out room.
Yeah.
With a white screen, just a standard white screen. If you're doing it in a lot of ambient light, say for a sports party or something where you want the lights on, you got people wandering around, then you need a special kind of screen called an ambient light rejecting screen. Otherwise, the image looks very washed out, and you don't get any benefit of HDR.
Right. That's really what I was wondering about. So in a completely blackened room with a good screen, and you just not a white wall, but a screen designed for projection, you'll get as good HDR as a direct view monitor?
Probably not quite as good, because the projector will never get as bright.
Yeah, right.
Projectors will never be as bright as flat panel TVs.
But the best of a projector situation, I guess, right?
Oh, yeah. If you're in a totally blacked out room, I wish this was even brighter, or, oh, man, I wish this had greater. It's beautiful. It's just gorgeous.
Well, this is now, is it available today, or you'll have to?
Yeah. I think they might be shipping next week, something like that. They said September, so it's imminent. It's right here.
Sony's 4K SXRD home cinema projector. A penny under $5,000. But in some ways, a breakthrough. The first relatively affordable home theater projector that does 4K and HDR.
Yep, exactly right.
And as we've said before, I think HDR is more important than 4K even. I mean, that's...
Absolutely, and everybody here agrees.
Yeah.
Everybody here agrees. Yeah. That's exactly right. But you're not going to get HDR without getting 4K. There are no 1080p... They go together. They really do.
What else did you see? You said there was something else, because we have about 30 seconds. Well,
one other quick thing. Epson has what's called an ultra short throw projector, which is a projector you put up near the wall. It shoots upward onto the wall, onto a screen. You don't have to have a blackened room because it's very bright. And it acts like a giant flat screen TV for $3,000.
Wow.
That's another pretty breakthrough product.
But again, with both of these, you're going to want to add to the budget a good screen. You can't have a projector without
a
custom screen.
Correct.
Scott Wilkinson, he writes about all this stuff at the avsforum.com. That's where he's editor-in-chief, and on our podcast, The Home Theater Geek Show, at twit.tv/HTG. Thank you, Scotty.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm so sorry. We were, in fact, in the Sony demo at
well, 11. I kind of knew, because the chat room said Scott was worried because he had an appointment at that time. So that's more important that you see this, frankly.
Well, and now I can talk about it.
Right. You couldn't talk about it till you saw the demo.
Exactly. And in Sony's booth, which I did see day before yesterday, they were showing the big gun, you know, the $25,000 job. So this was my first chance to really see the $5,000 job in action, and I'm really glad I did. It's remarkable.
It has an Ethernet port, which is interesting. Does it have smart TV features?
No. I don't know why. That must just be for troubleshooting.
Maybe. Because it also has a serial diagnostic port, but really two HDMI ports is the key.
That's the key. And it'll accept. It's interesting because they showed some projectors in roughly the same price range that the HDMI input operates at 10 gigabits per second, and that will not allow them to accept full HDR 4K.
What?
Even the Sony, they did this great demo of they played 4K HDR on the on an Epson. Similar price range, and the Sony $5,000 job, and the Epson just choked. wouldn't play anything. But the Sony played it, and it looked great. So,
and I see it as a motorized zoom, so you could sit there with your remote control and set it. Yeah, so it's not like the end of the world doesn't have presets.
Precisely, and that's another really important thing. I've seen $8,000, $9,000 projectors where the lens shift is manual. You have to actually twiddle a knob on the case, right? At least the Sony, it's motorized.
So would it be dumb to buy this if there is a little light leakage, or would I have to get that special screen? I don't think we have any room in the house we could get that dark.
Well, it depends. I'd have to look at examine or see what kind of room, what kind of ambient light there is. At night, it's no problem. You know,
that's true. Yeah. Because I would love to, like, have a screen that comes down, we could have movie night. That'd be kind of fun.
That would be great. And this projector would be just awesome.
It's about the same price as a good 4K TV. It's not much more.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. In fact, you can spend a lot more on a 4K TV, like a 75-inch or a 77-inch OLED. I mean, that's going to be in the five figures.
And this could be, what, 180 inches? This could be huge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Far bigger.
Yeah.
Far bigger.
Yeah.
So that's the big advantage there.
That's
so
very cool. Very,
it's
very
amazing.
Cool.
Yeah, it really is amazing.
Breakthrough. Hey, it's time, completely appropriately, for the Giz Whiz. Dick D. Bartolo, Mad's maddest writer for five
decades.
He's here. He's in the studio. I love that guy. He joins us every week to talk about a gadget or a gizmo. Dickie D.
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, so I have a gadget if you do videos with your phone, as so many of us
do. I do. In fact, the rumor is the new iPhone's going to do 4K at 60 frames a second, which would be stunning. You know, just amazing.
You know what? I heard they're shooting the new Star Trek movie.
It's on the iPhone. Yeah.
They're going to save a ton of money.
It's kind of dopey because the director doesn't get a lot of respect when he goes, action, and he holds up his phone. But
yeah, well,
it's the modern times.
Modern technology. Yeah.
What can you do?
So there's a company called Movo, and they have something called the Smartphone Video Rig.
Ooh.
And it's kind of interesting. So it's a handle to hold your phone, but it has 3/4-inch female threads if you want to use a tripod or you want to screw in a light tower like those little LED light panels that
we use. Yeah.
They also make a version, which is the one that I bought, with a microphone that slides into a cold slot. And the microphone's reversible. So if you're narrating your video, you face the mic toward you.
This is so cool.
If not, you face it toward the person that you want to talk. It comes with a couple of windscreens, the furry windscreen.
And then you get a little more respect when you're directing your magnum opus. Because they say, you've got a furry windscreen. Okay, you must know what you're doing.
Yeah, well, not only that, Leo, but then when you talk to the person, you say, do you prefer the 90-degree or the 120-degree pickup pattern? Then they go,
you really are a professional.
Oh, what a professional.
So this looks like it'll fit any phone. It's not specific to any model.
Up to the notes, 2.2 inches up to 3.6 inches wide.
Okay.
And as opposed to having one of those spring-loaded clips, you actually adjust the movable grips up and down and then lock them in tight. A couple of complaints. The little handle, I think, is a tiny bit on the short side, but that handle unscrews in case you want to put the whole rig on a tripod. You can also take the handle out and then use the rig as a phone stand if you're sitting there watching the movie you just shot. And the only other thing, that my only other gripe is, I wish the microphone is battery powered with a little LR44 cell. I wish it had a little LED to tell you that you left the mic on.
Yeah, I do that all the time, though.
Yeah, me too. And then you take it out the second time and just carry batteries with me. And then it has a built-in level. So
I like that. So you know if you're holding it right. Yeah.
Not only do you say, do you want 90 or 120-degree pickup? You go, can you lean a little left? Because my level says, sure.
Tilt left. Tilt left. Yeah. Oh,
there you go.
Tilt Mark left. Hamill, you're tilting. Tilt right. Yeah.
And that's pretty decent.
Now, how much is this, though? This could be a lot of money.
Without the mic, it's under $30.
What? That's great.
Yeah. And then with the mic kit, which I bought just to see what the mic quality was like, which is pretty decent, is $57 for the kit and the mic kit. And you get the furry screen and a foam screen. And you'll look very
You know what they call those furry screens? I shouldn't say this out loud. They
call you know what? Someone told me, but I forgot.
Dead cat. That's a
dead cat?
Yes. It's a terrible thing. But, you know, sound men are cruel, cruel, cruel.
Yes. Yeah. That takes a little bit away from the professionalism.
But that's what they call it. For the mic? No, that's how they know you're professional.
That's the official. Oh, my word.
So if you want to get a link to this, you best go to Dick's website, gizwiz.biz, G-I-Z-W-I-Z.B-I-Z. He has everything there. All you have to do is click the link on the right that says that the Gizwiz visits the tech guy. That picture of me on that looks like I'm about 25. Actually, I think that's when we got it made. So keep up the good work, Dick. That's well done. Good. I think they dyed the hair white to make it keep it up with the times.
Keep it up to date. Yeah.
And but while you're there, you might also click on the What the Heck Is It link. It's a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine from this guy. All you have to do is figure out what the, well, this is obvious. Those are wax lips, right? What is that gadget? It's wax lips for people who are getting their mouth washed out with soap. So it has a nice grip for the soap. You can just put them right in there. I don't know.
That's a decent answer.
It's got an it's interesting looking. It's a fun game. You got a couple of months to play. Go to gizwiz.biz. Click the What the Heck Is It contest link. You have September until the end of October to figure it out and win a copy of Mad Magazine. Just like this one I'm holding up to the radio right now.
Ta-da!
Ta-da! With Dick's autograph right on it there. Thank you, Dickie D. Have a great week.
Okay, buddy.
Carrie, Rancho Santa Margarita. Hi, Carrie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good. This is my first time calling in.
Okay. Don't be nervous. I won't bite.
No, on the contrary. I think you're just a fantastic guy. I can tell right through the airwaves.
Oh, you're so kind.
You are a wonderful person and so knowledgeable. I don't have any fancy tech questions. It's really just about buying, purchasing.
Okay.
I am an I person. I love everything I have an iPad. I have my Mac laptop. I have a desktop at home and iPhones. So we're just about ready to purchase new iPhones, my husband and I. I know the new iPhone's coming out. Do we have a date yet?
We know that it'll be announced on Tuesday, September 12th. I don't, you know, anything I'm going to, that's the only thing we know. Anything I'm going to say now is speculation. But usually, by this time, we have a pretty good idea. What Apple typically does, well, actually, this is going to be a little different this year because it's the 10th anniversary. So we expect three new iPhones, the traditional kind of upgrade of the iPhone 7 and 7 Plus, 7S or 7S Plus for want of a better name. And then some magical new special super duper 10th anniversary iPhone. We don't know what the name of that will be. I'm going for iPhone Pro, but some say iPhone 8, iPhone 10. We don't know. And that may not be available right away. My suspicion is Apple will keep to their usual schedule, which is they'll announce it on the 12th, pre-orders on the 15th for delivery at the end of the month. But be prepared, because that new phone, the 10th anniversary phone, will very likely be in extremely short supply. And so that's going to be the one where you're going to get up at midnight and you're going to hammer the store and order it if you want to get it anytime right away. Because otherwise, if you wait a day or two or wait till the week after, you'll be getting it in next year, is my expectation. So, and it's also prepare yourself. Going to be expensive. Now, you sound like, because you're iFans, you sound like you're willing to spend as much as $1,200 for this new phone, but that's the rumor. I noticed you asked about iPads. I don't expect new iPad announcements this time. No. Just iPhone, Apple Watch, and Apple TV. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll find out Tuesday. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.